Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Matt Watson. Hi, Matt.
What's going on, man?
I am at our new office in downtown Kansas City, Kansas, and I have been working super hard building us a real podcast studio. So who knows? Dare to dream.
Hey, maybe we'll get to record some podcasts again. You know, we haven't really recorded any in person since the pandemic. So
no, we haven't. And, you know, we've wanted to always build a proper studio. Now, we tried that once. And by the time I got back from a trip to the Philippines, we never even got to use it.
Yeah, that was sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad moments in podcast history. Now, speaking of great moments in podcast history, Matt, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by ChatDesk. Does your business receive a high volume of phone calls? You can deflect over 10% of your calls to Facebook Messenger and save up to 80% on your support costs by using ChatDesk. They have a special offer for Startup Hustle listeners. It's free for a limited time. Go to chatdesk.com/shift or click the link in the show notes. They have a pretty cool offering, Matt. It is like gig economy for support people, but it's scalable. So have you ever been in a spot where you needed to have support or support your product and you didn't really have the budget or need for a full-time person? Because that's what they fix.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Having flexible people to step in and help out.
It's like trained gig economy people. So speaking of growing a business, it's time for part 33 of 52. Now, in the past, we recently discussed how to get to market faster, which is different than today's topic, which is creating a go-to market strategy. Now, Matt, I've known you for quite a while, and I have heard you say go-to-market strategy a bunch. So when you hear go-to-market strategy, what are you thinking, dude?
Who are we selling this to? How do they know we exist? Why do they care? You know, it's all the basics, right? Like so often people create a product, but they don't really know how they're going to sell it or who they're going to sell it to, how they're going to reach them. You know, it's like the tree falling in the forest, right? Does it make a sound or not? Like you got to know how to reach your audience.
We've talked in the past about the reasons that startups or businesses fail, and we had a really long list. And number one in big font and bold letters was a poor product market fit. So what you just described of not knowing how to sell it, whatever, those are warning signs. Those are symptoms of a bad product market fit, right?
Absolutely. And actually, I was just on a call before this where I was talking to somebody who actually has amazing product market fit, but just can't figure out how to monetize it, right? Like you run into all these sort of issues depending on your startup. So this is a fun topic for me.
Yeah, and it's different. You know, I say a lot when it comes to our clients at Full Scale that they're like snowflakes because they're all different. But all businesses are like that. All businesses have strengths, weaknesses, different sets of resources. I mean, they're all unique. So how do we create an episode where we create some tailored advice about a go-to-market strategy? I mean, when I think of go-to-market strategy, I think, hey, it's time to sell. But if you've listened to the show for a while, you know that I'm also telling you that you need to start selling the day you open the business, pretty much.
Got to build up the pipeline. Always building the pipeline.
All right. So when we talk to go-to-market strategy, I mean, we're just talking about product market fit. I think the next thing on the list is, you know, who's your target audience? And in a world full of options for advertising and social media platforms that know I want a Snickers before I do and all of that, I mean, how do we, you have more options for targeting a precise audience than ever, but if you don't have an idea of who your target audience should be, that's still a problem.
Well, we talk about this a lot, even at Full Scale internally, right? Where we're like, who is our best customer, and how do we, the leads we get on our website and whether or not we should potentially even talk to them, right? Like if we get a lead from India, what are the odds that us selling our services to a company from India makes sense, right? Like we have a specific target audience, which could be companies in the US or Australia or England or whatever, right? And if you're outside of that audience, it's like, do we waste our time and resources on them? Because they're just not our target. Right. So at some point it's focusing on a niche and focusing down the audience to focus your efforts.
So, you know, I was recently watching the movie American Gangster with Denzel Washington, where he plays Frank Lucas, who was certainly engaged in his go-to-market strategy was crime. But with that, he went straight to the source. He said, let's cut out the middleman and go straight to the source. Now, that's what I was thinking about there. So when it comes to target audience, I mean, at Full Scale, and I head up a lot of our marketing efforts, I try to cut out the middleman and go straight to the source. Meaning my target audience is straight to the decision maker. And for us, that is chief technology officers, CIOs, CEOs, founders,
yeah,
people with those kind of job titles. Because when I say cutting out the middleman, that's what you need to do if you have a business-to-business strategy. Because if I am deciding to instead advertise and promote what we do three steps down the decision chain, I have to climb back up it. Now, not every product has the ability to do that. You know, I had a guest on the other day, and I think this episode will come out before that, but it was he owns sellyourmac.com, and they've sold like $44 million of previously owned Macs.
Wow.
And yeah, it's a ton. Dang. But when you look at your target audience, that's like anybody that has a computer that uses Mac.
Yep.
And that's difficult because we've talked about this so much in the past. It's like, oh, wow, look at all these people that are potential buyers. And then you go to market it and you're like, oh, wow, look at all these people that are potential buyers. And I said the same words, but it's a completely different scenario because trying to narrow it down. So the purpose of this is most ads are based on the number of impressions or where you get showed. So if you're shooting blanks at people outside your target audience, then your cost of acquisition is going to be pretty high.
Well, and I think another good example of this is I was actually just hiring new landscaping company, right? And I look around at like who is servicing other people in my neighborhood. I'm like, well, they must be doing a good job. And if I was them, if they have a lot of customers in this neighborhood, they should be marketing to this neighborhood, right? Not marketing to some other neighborhood across town. Like it wouldn't make any sense. And sometimes it's the point is driving down to a small audience is where they're going to have concentrated success. Like they can own my little neighborhood of 400 homes and just totally dominate it, right? Versus spreading their efforts and driving all around town to do one random house all over the place, right? And sometimes those constraints actually force you to be wildly successful.
Yeah, I was recently watching an episode with Marcus Lemonis, and he was working with two women that had they had a small restaurant that they wanted to take national. It was like a lobster sandwiches or something like that. And that's exactly what they were doing. They were hyper targeting, meaning like they were being geo specific, because so they're in Brooklyn. So the premise was, if you were 1 mile away from the restaurant, you were really a hot advertiser, because you're right around the corner theoretically. And then the further that got, and think about it, you know, when you look at radiuses, especially in an area like New York City, I mean, a 5 mile radius, how many people live in a 5 mile radius in and around Brooklyn? That's a lot of people to advertise to. So in some cases, in some businesses, I mean, you need to be that. And there's a lot of technology out there that helps with that. And even like the social media platforms and other stuff, I mean, they know where you're at, and you can target ads to show to people in that area, similar to the landscape company. And that's, you know, I've actually seen, you just talk about guerrilla marketing too. So, you know, I don't live that far away from you, and I regularly find notes or like flyers on my door that are like, "Hey, we're working on your neighbor's house."
Yeah.
And that's smart. That's smart. Because guess what? That costs the price of a piece of paper.
And you can see the quality of their work right out your window.
And here, another thing too is, you know, as a marketer, don't underestimate the power of the people, meaning the people are like that you're selling to, because there's a trust factor. Oh, if my neighbor chose this person, then maybe I should. And then sometimes it's just convenience. Like, it's funny, I had a note on my trash can of all things the other day. And it was, so my very first job that I, like the first real company that I started, was painting numbers on curbs, you know, like the white box with the black numbers. And we got like $5 a curb, but someone had put these like post-it notes on everyone's trash can on trash day, and it said, "We're gonna be out doing this tomorrow." They wanted $40. Yeah. I was like, wow, times have changed. But they were like, "So take this and sign it and stick it on your front door, and we'll come by and paint it." Then that's smart. And that was, you know, they were canvassing. And another thing too, I like the approach of sticking it to my trash can, because I definitely saw it, because I had to go back in from the curb.
And there's not a lot of other junk mail on top of your trash can.
And now that said, that's smart marketing. Like, that's a go-to-market strategy that's pretty darn effective. And, you know, why do we just talk about two things, that like a flyer and a post-it note? Because some of this stuff doesn't have to be like a rocket science digital approach. I mean, there is a lot of really And that's either referred to as guerrilla or grassroots marketing. So
one of the big things we need to talk about, and you've heard me talk about this a lot, is there's a lot of different kinds of traction channels. And there's a book, I think it's called Traction, and I don't remember who wrote it. And there's like 18 of them or something, right? And there's all these different traction channels or kind of go-to-market strategies. And some of them are, like you're saying, they're traditional marketing, flyers or radio or TV, you know, digital marketing, content marketing, podcasting, going to trade shows, cold calling, right? There's all these different ways that you can go to market and reach your customers. And the key is, every single business is going to be different. Every single business is going to have different kinds of success, right? At Full Scale, one of our biggest traction channels is this podcast, right? Another big one is referrals, right? I have another friend that runs a little consulting business. For him, it's 100% referrals. He doesn't even have a website, right? But he has more work than he can do. It's 100% referral. And for you, depending on whatever kind of business you have, I really recommend that book and go through, or you can actually just Google traction channels, and there's a list out there, right? But you can read the book. It's just picking like, what are the top two or three that you think work for you? And the key of the book is, it would tell you, is you want to figure out which one works the best and maximize it before diluting your efforts into doing other ones, right? If you're really successful at referral, maybe you don't need to worry about anything else. Like, don't spend all your time doing a bunch of other shit, you know, that doesn't work. Focus on the one that really works and maximize it.
So someone out there is listening right now and they're thinking, well, I don't have any traction. I got to get that moving. Yeah. By the way, the book Traction's by Gino Wickman.
There you go.
Yeah. So now the thing is if you don't have any traction, you have to try to gain it, which means that you are going to have to, when it comes to marketing, there's three words that matter: test, test, test.
Yep. Yep.
And,
yep.
And when I say test, 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 it, you don't have to like, there's all, it, this can get confusing because, you know, now people, we need to run an A, B, blah, 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 blah. No, you need to, first, you need to try a couple of things and you need to try to match them up. We're back to that target audience. So, man, I'm starting a new business where I'm building sculptures out of popsicle sticks. Okay. And I'm partnered with a 5-year-old on this. But we're
trying to get you in some art galleries. That's your go-to-market strategy.
Well, I'm thinking that Pinterest might be a good place to start, or Etsy.
Cool TikTok videos.
Yeah, okay, that's good. That's another potential.
Brainstorming. Here we go. We're working on it.
Now I'm really not starting a popsicle stick sculpture business, but that was a good example because LinkedIn probably wouldn't be a good spot for me to try to gain traction at that business. Because one, the subject matter on the site or, you know, wherever that is, it's not even related to what I'm trying to sell. And sometimes that can be a good thing, but usually it's not. And, you know, when you look at something like Etsy, that's where people are already selling crafts and doing stuff like that. Like eBay could be another example of that. And there's a lot of stuff out there. Or maybe we want to just take it to the streets and there's a crafts fair or something like that. So it's the same thing. Like a farmer's market might be a traction channel for someone that has a business that's related to that. Maybe you have a honey business.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and like the thing is if you don't have any traction, you're not going to get a distribution deal with the supermarket chain, but that might be it. And that might be an easy place for you to get started and also figure out. So with that, I think that, you know, when we talk about a go-to-market strategy, send it back to this honey business, Matt. So now I love honey. So I could actually buy a gallon of it and like see myself doing that.
So I'm going to call you Pooh Bear from now on.
Yeah, you can. And, you know, but maybe you don't. You maybe you don't want that much. So like, you know, you got honey, part of the go-to-market strategy is also like understanding your own product, understanding your own service. Like, and we went through this at Full Scale. So I'll give you an example. So Full Scale is almost 4 years old. Go to fullscale.io if you're curious about the business Matt and I own. We help software businesses build teams. But with that, when we first started the business, we actually took on a whole bunch of different clients. We tried little jobs, we tried ongoing stuff. And the whole idea of that
product market fit
was to see, because we didn't really know. We thought we knew, but we weren't 100% sure. So we felt that the ongoing long-term relationship and building teams was the way to go, but we wanted to try a bunch of stuff too, because along the way to finding those kind of clients, there was a lot of other business possibilities out there. Now we chased a few of them and really came back to the thesis statement that what we originally thought the business would, could, and should do was in fact where we should be. But some of that we wanted to explore because it sure felt like there was a lot of money floating around here and there. And it turned out that those accounts or those projects actually detracted from our ability to do the better, more popular service in general. So some of this is like figuring out where and when you want to, you know, do your stuff. Now, I mentioned earlier, I was watching an episode of The Prophet and I've enjoyed that show. But he, you know, as any of these businesses where someone comes in or any of these shows where someone comes in and they're trying to fix a problem business, it's usually because that business is trying to do way too much. It's like a restaurant that has like 37 types of sandwiches, but when they look at it, really people only buy 5. So some of that's, you know, that go-to-market strategy is important because you need to figure out where, when, and how you're making your money. And you'll find in a lot of cases, you're spending a lot of time, effort, and energy on the shit that is the least profitable or most worthless for the business. Yeah.
So let's bring this back to tech companies for a minute, right? Because that...
Oh yeah, we're starting a tech company.
That's now the series, on but yeah. Startup Hustle. We help all sorts of businesses and entrepreneurs, but let's focus it on tech companies for a minute, because there's some really major decision points when you're selling like a SaaS product, right? Is it business to business? Are you selling to other businesses? Are you selling to consumers? So if you're selling to consumers, is it an app that they pay $5 for, or is it ad supported or a monthly subscription, right? Like all these are very different business models. And then if it's, or if it's business to business, is it an enterprise sale, right? Is this a long, complicated sales process that takes months and then they pay you $50,000 a year? Or is it a smaller business like Gigabook as an example, where it might be $20 a month, right? Your business strategy on those is totally different. Your go-to-market strategy is totally different, right? You can't hire a $200,000 a year enterprise salesperson to sell Gigabook for $20 a month.
Nope.
Doesn't work. Doesn't make any sense, right? But if you're selling this big enterprise software like Netreo, where I work, you know, we sell an enterprise product. Yeah, sure. We might pay salespeople 200 grand a year to sell that because our customers pay $50,000 a year, $100,000 a year, right? But your go-to-market strategy on how you find these customers, market to them, the traction channels, your entire business, like the type of employees you have, how much focus you put on support and the sales models, the market, everything is dramatically different depending on these key decisions. And especially when you're first starting, you have to pick because it changes everything.
So what you're trying to do is make the phone ring, make the inbox chime, make it all occur. And, you know, that's in the scalability that can be kind of tricky. And that's why I want to mention again that today's episode is brought to us by ChatDesk. So if you're looking to reduce the number of phone calls and voicemails coming into your business,
yes, please,
and lower your customer support costs.
Yes, please.
Our friends over at ChatDesk enable you to shift your calls to message channels like Facebook Messenger. You can schedule a demo and check out the discount they're offering to Startup Hustle listeners by visiting the link in the show notes or heading over to the partner page, which is at startuphustle.com/partners. And you get a link there. You can also go to chatdesk.com/shift. So, you know, that's it. I was just on a meeting with someone at ChatDesk. And so, you know, we check these things out before we recommend them. But I mean, that's actually something I think needs to be part of your go-to-market strategy because support's tricky. And, you know, if you are going to sell something, you need to be ready to support it, whether it's a product or software or any of it. Now, we were centric on tech. And I think that's when you're starting a tech company, the support part of it's kind of hard because you usually don't have enough clients or users to have a dedicated person or department in there. But if you're not supporting your stuff, you're, regardless of how great your go-to-market strategy is, you're going to have a lot of churn or a lot of swings and misses.
Well, at Stackify, support was one of the things that set us apart, right? Because it was inevitable that somebody would install our software and they'd have questions. Right. So if we can answer those questions very, very quickly, and our goal internally was to answer every one of them via email within 1 hour, and 99.9% yep. of the time we did, versus they would message our competitor, and a competitor might not respond for 24 to 48 hours. So what do you think happens when somebody installs our competitor's product and they get stuck and they're like, shit, I need to solve this problem and I can't get this tool to work? What do? They go download a different tool, right? Yep. They jump over and they install our software. And hopefully they have no problems and it just works. But if they do and we respond really quick, they're like, wow, these guys are on it. I like how they do customer service. That's a differentiator, right? Yep. The other key thing to what you were just mentioning in support changes dramatically based on who you're handling. The target customer you have is things like proof of concepts, right? Like at Netreo, everybody wants to do a proof of concept with us, right? They want to install our software in their data centers and do these big tests for 3 months. And we have to help them set it all up. It takes huge support efforts for us to do those proof of concepts, right? But we're willing to do it because we know there's a really high chance that they're going to write us a check for $100,000 at the end of it. But we have to be able to staff that and have people to do all that, right? Which is totally different depending on the business model, right? Some other business models like proof of concept wouldn't make any sense. Like we can't afford to do a proof of concept if you're going to pay us $100 a month. Like just sign up or go away.
Yeah, I ran into the same thing growing Gigabook because when we first started getting users, the problem was setting up your account because it's so customizable. And that's like the strength and the weakness of Gigabook because, I mean, you've even gone through it because if you don't customize it properly or you don't know how or what it does, then you're either not fully utilizing it and getting all the benefits from it, or it might be a little frustrating. Now, that said, with the right support, or the right setup on the way in, which is what we ended up doing. We created an onboarding flow that wouldn't even let you in. If you didn't want to take a few minutes to answer a few questions and get set up, we didn't even let you in the platform.
Well,
why? Because no one was staying. We like literally tracked people that skipped onboarding, and 0% of them converted. Instead, we created something that only took a couple minutes. And, you know, and when you got in, you at least were able to do a couple things rather than making you just make it easy to use your product, or people aren't going to use the product.
I remember you spent a lot of effort optimizing all that, right? Like you create little training videos and improving all the help docs, right? So people ask common questions. They go to help and they search like, how do I offer a new service or whatever, right? And if they can't find help, that's where you need something like Chat Desk or, you know, built-in chat support to just quickly answer the questions, right? They have really simple questions. They just need to know now, how do I do this simple thing? And let's be honest, a lot of people are lazy. They don't want to dig through the docs to go find it either. They just want to chat with you and just help them.
That is an honesty. That's just truth. I mean, like, that's just the reality of the world. And there's, you know, there's books on the subject, and I can't remember the name of one. I think it was called Hooked. And it was all about like the digital age and like how so many of these things, like, so, you know, Facebook, Twitter, all these different platforms, they're competing with each other to keep you in there. So how do they do that? And they actually, the author used Twitter as an example. So Twitter's like maybe the fastest onboarding of anything ever. It takes like 15 seconds to fill it out and you're in, and you can tweet. And, you know, the thing is if you don't do that, you're going to leave a lot of people behind. Now in some companies though, that's not always the great thing. So like at Fullscale, we've built a remote developer and management platform, and we're continuing to improve it and do all this different stuff. But for us, you know, we can't even make that. It's the same thing as Gigabook. We can't even really make recommendations or suggestions on who you might want to add to your team or whatever if you don't answer specific questions. So in some levels, you know, you have to make that decision as part of your go-to-market strategy. Now, I will tell you that your success rate, meaning the number of people that enter whatever it is that you're doing, is going to be dramatically lower with every step that you add to the process. I mean, this is just consumer science. And so your goal needs to be to make it fast and easy to get in. So you can have a great go-to-market strategy. We've talked about this before too. A lot of people will try cost per click ads, and then they get a bunch of clicks and they say, oh, I guess it doesn't work. I got 200 clicks, but nobody bought anything. And I'm sitting here going, you know, that's not the ad's fault. That's your fault. The ad's job is to get clicked. It's like, what happens on the other side of that click? But this is important stuff, because this is go-to-market strategy right here. Like, what's the landing page experience that person gets to wherever they enter your site or however they're driven to it, especially with tech? So, you know, there's a different message that's important. Well, at Fullscale, there's a different message for someone that wants big enterprise development teams, as opposed to someone that wants to build a one-off mobile app.
Yeah. And that's the key topic here, right? Is depending on your go-to-market strategy also completely changes the structure of your business, your product, how you sell it, how you price it, how you package it. All of it can change dramatically. These things can be really tied to each other. Do you watch Breaking Bad? You ever watch Breaking Bad? And in some sense, we relate it to Breaking Bad, right?
It's what took you 20 years to watch that, by the way?
Do you want to be the guy who slings a little bit of meth, or do you want to be the guy who makes pounds of it and sells it, right? But the go-to-market strategy of that is dramatically different, right? And that's the point, is your business model changes dramatically depending on what you're trying to do.
Did you really just compare Walter White and Jesse Pinkman
here on the
podcast? Yeah. Hey, you know,
to move pounds, you got to have a different strategy.
We've talked about everything from that to American Gangster to popsicle stick sculptures to large enterprise software. Here's the thing, people. A lot of these principles are still the same.
Absolutely.
Right? They might have different paths, but the basic tenets of go-to-market strategy and marketing in general are highly similar.
Do you want to be Jesse Pinkman or Walter White?
Yeah. I mean, right. So, I mean, to me, that's an easy choice.
Yeah.
So, all right. So there's a lot of benefits to having a go-to-market strategy. Let's talk about them. So first off, just generally as a business, it's creates a lot of clarity and a defined plan and direction. Focus. Yeah. Like, this is what we're doing and this is how we're doing. And, you know, if you do end up in a business that grows really quickly, and we went through this at Full Scale, sometimes you have to actually take a couple steps back and like refocus. And we've even done that recently. Just, we're doing less stuff because we went to create our go-to-market strategy and we were looking for traction channels. And you have to sit back and re-examine those from time to time.
So,
and sit, yeah.
So perfect example, right? At Full Scale, we have 220 employees, whatever it is, doing all sorts of stuff. But if somebody called you today and said, hey, Matt, we love what you guys do. Can you build us a team of Ruby developers or Salesforce developers? You'd be like, it's just not what we do. Just not what we do, right? Because you're like, they're really hard to find. And then if we hire those people, you know, we have a long-term commitment to these employees, but we don't find a lot of clients that want this type of work. It's just not our niche, right? At some point in time, you just have to say no to things, or otherwise as a business, you get diluted, right? You're like, oh, we do this and we do this and we do this and we do this. But then we have problems finding clients that want all these things. Like, our menu is too big.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, once again, we're comparing that to the sandwich shop that have too big.
The menu is too big.
Yeah. And that's the thing. So, but you got to figure some of that out in the beginning. I'm not going to, you know, look, anyone that's going to tell you that you can have a precise vision and view of this before you actually do it is being overly optimistic, because you really have to see how people react to things. There's, you know, there's price, there's competition, there's demand, and like a whole lot of stuff that you just really don't understand until you get in and start messing with it. I mean, that's pretty much the whole thing. So, you know, like overall, I mean, when it you know, a couple other things we should, you know, we mentioned a target audience. Once you start to figure that out, you can do things like, you know, looking at a buyer persona. You know, and like, Matt, so like at some of the businesses that you've owned and run, like what were some of the personas of the buyers?
Well, like at Stackify, our persona was the development managers usually, right? Where like now that Netreo has acquired us, their persona is different. It's IT operations, the CTO, the CIO, and the sysadmin side, operation side of the house. It's totally different persona. And yeah, every business is different. You know, even Full Scale sells into kind of IT dev shops, right? But the persona of the buyer is a little different than Stackfire Netreo.
Yeah, and it is a completely different buyer, because the people that would be likely to install Stackify are not who I'm advertising to.
No.
Primarily. I mean, there is some overlap. It's like kind of like a Venn diagram version of it. That, you know, they're, I mean, obviously they habitate in the same space and world, and there's CTOs, but that's only a fraction of the persona we look for. So some of the things I don't mind sharing this. So as we evolved, and the interesting thing is, and thank you for all of you that have reached out to us at Full Scale. Like, we see you, we hear you, and we want to thank you. But when it comes to what we do at Full Scale, we don't typically work with companies that are brand new, which is a little confusing, because we host Startup Hustle, and those are technically still startups, but that's a tough product market fit for us, because we deal primarily in full-time services, and then they're intended to be long-term team building. So one of the things that's a little trickier with a service business, and I still consider us to be a tech company, even though we are a tech services company, is, you know, our biggest assets are people. So we have to also make sure that our people are in stable, forward moving, organized environments, or they show up to work and they feel that added stress from that day one stuff. You know, like, businesses are very chaotic in the very beginning, and that's just the way it goes. So, you know, so some of the, but being able to define that persona is also being able to know and understand, like, our fastest growing and biggest clients have between 10 and 100 employees.
Right.
You know,
they're in growth mode.
That was the persona that some of them fit a few years ago that now have 1,000 employees.
Yeah.
So you got to be able, and that's a question too, is, you know, I was recently talking to someone about our services, and they were asking, you know, like, well, if we start with 5 people, how quick can we get to 40? And that's a you need to be prepared to be honest about that too. Cause if you can't get there, then, you know, that's the thing. I mean, I think as old and experienced as I've become at a lot of this, I think that part of your go-to-market strategy, it just includes transparency. Tell people what the benefits of your product are, tell them what your competitive advantage is, and get to work trying to build some trust.
You know, the other thing that I think is universally the same, no matter what your product is content marketing, right? No matter what kind of company you have and product you're trying to sell, content marketing in some form or another is part of what you do, right? Like even if you're doing enterprise sales, you're writing a lot of white papers and case studies and different things, right? Versus if it's, you know, Gigabook or something, it's a lot of blogging and trying to attract customers in that way, right? And at Full Scale, we do podcasting. That's a type of content marketing. It seems like content marketing is something that almost every business needs to do, but it could just be different kinds of content.
And on the day that we recorded this, Matt, we published an episode because we're on Fridays now. We moved to the Friday spot, man.
Prime time.
It was prime time and then it wasn't. And then it is again. And it's mainly just because you're on Fridays now, Matt. Prime time follows you. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So, you know, there's so much of what we've talked about, and I know we're talking about go to market, but it's, you know, support is important and client retention. And what we have an episode of Startup Hustle TV. It's episode 20.1 that is literally titled Client Retention Tips from Startup Founders. Go to YouTube and type in Startup Hustle. Now, you know, when it comes to that, remember the support, it's important because you can drive as many new customers or clients in. Now, if you're just something, okay, so I used to sell pianos, Matt, you know that, right? Like a long, long time ago, most people buy a piano once. So client retention wasn't always the priority at some of the places that I worked, because you're talking about a product that a traditional
once in three generations of a family, maybe
100 years. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, now I worked in the digital side of things. So we were also trying to convince people that those were real pianos. And, you know, so some of that client retention doesn't matter. But, you know, for tech companies, if you can sign up as many users if you want, if you churn them all right away,
you're
wasting your time. And so, you know, once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by ChatDesk. They help you reduce the number of phone calls coming into your business by over 10% by shifting calls over to Facebook Messenger and other channels. You can get started in just a few minutes. The service is free for a limited time. Be sure to check out chatdesk.com/shift. That's chatdesk.com. There's a link in the show notes. You know, I went on a demo with them and it was really cool because they really will help you scale, and they give you it's like real people. It's not just a bot or anything like that. So that's pretty cool. So
by the way, I saw something totally cool on my phone the other day. I have an Android phone. I know I'm not as cool as you and you have an iPhone, but on my Android phone, I went to call a business and it came up and it said, you can chat with the business instead.
Yep.
And right on my phone, like on the dialer, like where I would dial the number, it prompted me to chat with the company instead of calling them. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, this is the best thing in the entire world that's ever happened to me.
It's because you don't want to talk to people, right?
No, I don't want to talk to people.
So, Matt, I want to point out from my desk at the new Full Scale office in downtown Kansas City, Kansas, I can see a casino and I'm staring right at it. And I just see a red number 7 because it's the 7th Street Casino. So I'm thinking my go-to-market strategy is going to be, once again, stealing one of your cars and taking it to play penny slots, because that worked out for me like 3 or 4 years ago pretty well. I mean, that was my strategy. I went in, you know, and I was going to double. And then I think I had a lot of money at that point. So not really sure.
Exponential growth. Right. I like it.
So here we are at the end of the 33rd episode of our 52-part series. I mean, what are your takeaways here?
Well, I think for sure everyone's in the content business. You should be creating some kind of content. I mean, there's a whole lot of people that post videos on TikTok even, right? And it's just trying to drive business to some other thing, like OnlyFans or whatever it is these days, right? Like, it's crazy. But everybody's in the content business. It's just different kinds of content depending on what your niche is. And I think the other thing is understanding your go-to-market strategy and how it shapes every other facet of your business, right? Depending on if you're going after small clients or big clients or B2C or B2B, whatever it is, the go-to-market strategy changes everything else. Are you Walter White or Jesse Pinkman at the end of the day?
Depending on where you watch that series, that's a different question. So for me, I think, you know, if you don't, I love the test thing. You gotta roll that in. The whole purpose of that is to try and fail fast and figure out what really works. And I've said this before, and I say a lot just in life. I mean, when you're with a lot of this stuff, if you're looking for a traction channel, I compare it to looking for a crack. And then when you find that crack, your next job is to try to shove an elephant through it. You know, that's the whole premise. That's been my whole approach to marketing. So I run a lot of little micro tests. I do a lot of this, like even for this podcast, where I try different audiences. I try different iterations of it. I try different ad presentations. And I'm at the point where, like, I can pretty much with 1,000 impressions, I can tell, which is like $5 to $10 in most cases on something like Facebook, I can tell you if an ad's going to be a big hit or not. And that's just because I've run a lot of different tests. I understand the traction channels. And, you know, so much of that is important. And if you don't run through that pretty quickly, what you are going to run through pretty quickly is your budget. And, you know, it's if you just think, if you have a one now, if you own a business that you're fortunate enough to be positive that you only need to have one traction channel and that's going to get it done, good for you. But that is, I don't know anybody that has a business like that. You know, there's so many different places and things and stuff that you can do, and you got to figure that out. And I think when it comes to the go-to-market strategy, if you're sitting down, I've had people give me, you know, give you a pitch, they want an investment or something like that. And well, either they don't have a go-to-market strategy, which I see more often than not, which is not a good approach either. But then they're basing it on like really small, like tiny, like, hey, we signed up 3 customers and it was $2 a piece. How does this scale? You know, how do you look at
it? Repeatable.
How does this expand? And then you can't make assumptions without actually, you can make assumptions, but you can't really make plans without running some little bit of small tests. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And you don't have to like spend tens of thousands of dollars. Like in most cases, a couple $100 on some platform is going to give you some idea at least of what you're going to pay. I actually just did this on Facebook and LinkedIn for Full Scale. And I was advertising to different personas. And here's the thing, people, I wasn't, because, you know, we're not a high lead, like a high number of leads kind of business. So I was just trying to test and see how much it would cost to even get a click. And that's where the testing starts, just having an idea. Cause since, I mean, there, you would be shocked. Like there are businesses, my friend owns and operates a business that makes products for foundation repair. It's like $100 a click.
Oh, geez.
Sometimes more to get that. So here's the thing is like, if you think it's going to be way less than that, I mean, if your whole test budget's $100 and you get one click, you can't really say a whole lot about that.
Not scientific.
Right. So you can't really plan a business. You can't really get a go-to-market strategy. So you got to get that stuff figured out. And I think really in the end, if you're not ready to, you know, like I said, if you're not ready to do a little bit of that, you're going to blow through the budget pretty quick.
Yep.
Well, Matt, is that it? Are we going to market?
I think we're ready. Let's ship it.
Or am I going to the casino? My go-to-market strategy is to take my ad budget over to that casino.
And put it all in black?
Yeah, maybe. I might just maybe, or odd. So I have a foolproof system for winning at roulette. You sit by the table until something odd happens near the table, and then you just put it all on odd.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it works every time. So I'm going to go do that. I'll catch up with you next week.
All right, see ya.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.